Thank you for taking the time to listen to this life-changing message from the Ministry of Faith Bible Chapel. We hope this message will encourage you in all parts of your life. At the end of this message, you will hear more information on how to contact our church family, as well as directions for you to visit us for any of our worship services. Until then, join us for the service in progress.
Have you been with us for the last few weeks? We're in this great series that we're calling The Great Purpose, and we've been, our purpose is to take a look at all of the books of the Old Testament and to simply go through those one at a time and try to discover from each one of those books what is God's great purpose for giving us that book. What was he trying to communicate to the world then, and what is he trying to communicate to us today that we can take away with us and use in our lives? And so this series isn't just to throw out a bunch of facts about the Old Testament and to just inundate you with facts, but really our goal is for all of us to be able to move into a new place of relationship with the Lord and to be able to see what Jesus has done in our lives and to be able to see Jesus in those Old Testament books. And so one of the themes that we've seen over the last few weeks, if you've been with us, is this idea that we continue to see Jesus in all of those books. And Jesus was there, not just in print, but he was there. He was physically there with his people. And we see him in Genesis with his people bringing comfort and protection. And we see him in Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers. And tonight we're going to see him in Deuteronomy as we see God through the person of Jesus Christ visibly, physically there in the pages of the Old Testament. So even though these are old, old books, we're seeing life in them as we see Jesus there. Chuck Swindoll said this. He said, if our greatest need had been information, God would have sent us an educator. If our greatest need would have been technology, God would have sent us a scientist. If our greatest need would have been money, God would have sent us an economist. If our greatest need had been pleasure, then God would have sent us an entertainer to entertain us. But our greatest need is forgiveness. And so God has sent us a Savior. And I think it's amazing and profound that we can see our Savior in these books of the Bible, that we can see him in Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. And as we've been going through, we've seen Jesus in all of those books, and we'll see him again tonight in Deuteronomy. So Deuteronomy is the book that we're looking at. And so how many of you have read through the book of Deuteronomy? I'm just curious. And then you're familiar with what happens there. For me as a Christian, Deuteronomy has been one of my favorite books for all time, because as I came to the Lord as a brand new Christian in college, I'd been raised in the church, and so I'd kind of read a little bit of Deuteronomy, but as I read through it as a brand new believer, my eyes were opened up to this amazing, loving God. And I didn't see there, in spite of what is in the book of Deuteronomy, I didn't see a bunch of rules of do's and don'ts. I saw, rather, a God that loved me. I had grown up in church, and I knew the rules. I knew the do's, and I knew the don'ts, but I didn't know the God. And suddenly in this book of do's and don'ts, I find God. I see this God that loves me and wants a relationship that's pure and attractive and intimate. And I believe that for the first time I realized through the book of Deuteronomy that God cared about me. And I was, at that point in my life, I was memorizing a scripture, one verse, every single day. Lots of them came from the book of Deuteronomy because they spoke to me of God's intimate love for me. For the first time, I realized that God wanted me. He wanted my heart. He wanted all of my life. And he drew me into relationship with Jesus Christ through the book of Deuteronomy. It's interesting because I think that this is exactly what Moses was trying to do when he communicated the words that ended up being the book of Deuteronomy. He was trying to communicate a God of love and invite these people into a relationship with God. And I believe that that's what God intended, that as those words were spoken, his invitation would actually tug on the hearts of his people and would draw them into a relationship, maybe for the very first time, with him. And so with the Lord's help tonight, I hope that we'll be able to present, though Deuteronomy is full of numerous laws and instructions and commands, I hope that we're going to be able to present and we'll be able to see this God of love that generously and graciously invites us to come into a loving relationship with him. So just a little bit about the book of Deuteronomy. It's the fifth book of the Bible, so Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy. It's number 5, and it's a part of a set that many refer to as the Pentateuch. The Pentateuch being those 5 books, and Deuteronomy is the last one. Pentateuch is a Greek word that is actually 2 parts, penta, meaning 5, and tukos, not tukus, tukos, meaning scrolls, so 5 scrolls. The Pentateuch itself, that combination of those 5 books, is very unique to the Bible because it's all connected in theme, it's all connected in story, and it sets foundationally a stage of understanding of who God is, of what his plan is for mankind, and who his people are. It also establishes God's laws, the do's and the don'ts of God's laws, and rather than a prescribed way of living, it brings to life the life of the law and what God designed for us to be able to have life. Sometimes it's also referred to, this Pentateuch is also referred to, the laws of Moses or the books of Moses. And so we're actually capturing just the last one of those, of this whole Pentateuch. We're looking at the book of Deuteronomy. So the book of Deuteronomy takes place about 1405 BC, and it represents a very short period of time in the life of the history of the Jewish people. They've wandered through the desert for 40 years, and now they're on the plains of Moab, which is today modern-day Jordan. And they're sitting there in the wilderness, poised to go in to their promised land. And they're just within days of, weeks of, going in and possessing this land. The chart that we had from a couple weeks ago shows us the history sequentially of the books and where the Jewish people were at, the Israelites. So from the time they leave Egypt and they're on their exodus, we see Exodus and Leviticus and Numbers, and now we're at Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy is only 5 months worth of time, roughly, 5 months-ish. And so all of it, all 34 verses take place within a 5-month period of time. Many scholars think that actually Moses presented the book of Deuteronomy in a period of a week. It was 3 sermons, and we're going to talk about that in a second. And he gave one each day for 3 days in a row, or every other day. We're not quite sure how that unfolded. And in any case, it was a significant, significant time in Israel's history. It's unlike any other time in Israel's history. And it was a significant time, and we're going to see this as we continue to go forward. It's a significant time for all Jews and for all Christians for all time, because it signifies something that God did in mankind as he related to mankind and his desire for a relationship with them that happens here in Deuteronomy that sets the pace for all time and all relationships that God has with mankind. It's like no other book of the Old Testament. And in fact, it's exerted greater influence on the way that Jews and Christians have lived than any other book of the Old Testament. According to Lesore, Hubbard, and Bush, in their book called The Old Testament Survey, they say that Deuteronomy is a treasure chest of theological concepts that have influenced the religious thought and life of ancient Israelites, Jews, and Christians for all time. It's doctrinally foundational to everything else that happens in the Old Testament. So what happens in Deuteronomy sets the pace, if you will, for the rest of God's Word, really, not just the Old Testament. The name of the book in Hebrew is called Elei Hadabrim. I think I'm saying that right. And it means these are the words, or these are the words that Moses spoke. It's the first sentence there of the book. So these are the words that Moses spoke, and then the Greek had to come up with something that was a little bit more appropriate, and so they came up with this very odd word for us to say, Deuteronomy. Does anybody know what Deuteronomy stands for? It actually is a Greek word that's two words put together, deutero, meaning second, and nomos, meaning law, so second law. And so if you're just reading that for the first time, you're going to think, oh, this is the second law that God gave to the Jewish people. But it isn't the second law, it's the second reading of the law. So they actually received the law back here at Mount Sinai. And Moses made a God made a covenant through Moses with the Jewish people at Mount Sinai. And then 40 years goes by. And now they're going to repeat those words here on the plains of Moab as they're getting ready to go into the promised land. So the question is, why do these laws need to be repeated? What's the purpose of repeating these laws? If he's already stated to them, why is he going to repeat them to them again? The first reason, it's been 40 years. 40 years have passed as they've wandered through the wilderness, and they've lost the whole older generation, and it's been replaced by this newer and younger generation. Many of those younger and newer ones maybe weren't even born the first time that the law was read, so they never even heard the law. They were hearing it maybe secondhand from their parents. And then some of those that maybe were alive at the time when the law was actually read the first time, they were so young they probably don't even remember it now. And then Moses, I think, realizes that every generation needs to establish their own relationship with the Lord. And so this is that moment when this new generation is going to do that. In fact, Moses actually commands the people as they get ready to go into the land. He says, after you get into the land and you get established, once every 7 years, bring everybody together, all of your children and your wives and your slaves, and bring everybody together and read this covenant again. And giving the new generations coming up their own opportunity to make their own relationship with this amazing and wonderful God. The second reason that they needed to repeat it is that they were finally set to enter their promised land. And they're getting ready to step into a situation that they've never experienced before. They're going to be facing a whole new set of circumstances. They're going to be among a people that are living a lifestyle that's diametrically opposed to who their God is. And Moses realizes they need to hear these words again. They need to know this covenant that God has established with their parents. And Moses is preparing them to be set apart, to not be like the people that they're going to be with. And numerous times through Deuteronomy, he says, you're not to be like those people. You're not to live like them. You're not to serve their gods. You're to be different because you belong to me, because you're my people, and my people are a holy people. And then the third reason that needs to be repeated again is because now, after 40 years, Moses is 120 years old, and God has shown him that he's getting ready to pass away, that he's not going to cross the Jordan. He's not going to go in with them to possess the land. For the first time, these people are going to be without their leader. And now they're stepping into this very unknown situation, and they're not going to have the man that's given them instruction and encouragement and chastisement and all those things that Moses has been to them. And Moses realizes that they need to know that in spite of him, God is going to go with them, that God is going to go in front of them. And he says that to them several times. God is going before you. It's not about me. It's God that's going before you. And he'll tear down the walls of your enemies. And oh, by the way, Joshua is going to take the command after I leave. But it doesn't matter about Joshua either. I'm going ahead of you. God is going to be going ahead of you. And so in the end, this is kind of Moses's swan song, if you will. This is his last farewell, his departing words. It's like a deathbed experience, his deathbed wish, as he, like a dying father on his deathbed, begins to appeal to his children, and he begins to speak to them the last things that they need to know before he's gone. And so as we read through this, as you listen to the words from Deuteronomy, though they're full of eloquency and love and concern for the people, you hear in there the very strong sense of urgency that Moses has. There's this sense of urgency that he's trying to pass along to his people, that they need to be ready and awake for what they're getting ready to experience. He knows that He's not going to get another chance. He knows that his days are limited, and within a few days, literally, he's going to be dead, and that he has to get this message communicated one last time to these people that he loves and that he's poured his life into. He knows that what he has to say is extremely important and eternally significant, and so he takes the time. He makes these moments where he gives three long sermons, if you will. Now, tonight is going to feel long to you, I know, and by the time you walk out, you're going to be tired, but can you imagine, like, sitting in the edge of the wilderness of the desert, and then Moses gets up to speak, and he speaks all day long? This is what he does, and he represents to them their history. So these are the three things, the three sermons. The first sermon is this, and it's a shorter one. It's verses, or chapters, kind of 1 through 4. He rehearses with them their history. He reminds them of who they are, and he reminds them of whose they are. He reminds them how they came out of Egypt and what happened in the wilderness. He reminds them of God's faithfulness to them and everything that God's done to provide for them and to bring them to that point. And he reminds them of the covenant, the promise that God made to Abraham, that unconditional covenant that they would have that land and that they would be a people that would bless all the nations of the earth. So he reminds them of all that. He also reminds them of their unfaithfulness, of their sin, of their failings. And he reminds them that this can happen to them, that they need to be alert, that they need to be on guard. Then he spends the greatest portion of the book of Deuteronomy, kind of verse or chapter 4 through kind of 27, and he represents the law. So everything that was proclaimed to them at Mount Sinai, he represents that to them, the Ten Commandments and all the laws and the regulations and what those means and the recipe for living a healthy life. He goes through all of that, all of the instructions and all of the directions. And I believe it's God's wedding covenant with his people as he promises to bless them and to provide for them and to be in relationship with them as they love him, as they serve him, and as they observe everything that he's given them to do. In fact, many scholars, when you look at the book of Deuteronomy and the way it's laid out, many scholars say that it's laid out exactly like an ancient Near East contract or a covenant would have been laid out. The agreement between two nations or the agreement between two peoples or two people groups. Deuteronomy reads like a wedding covenant. It's actually a covenant, a contract between God and God's people, between the Jewish people. And so as we go through this, you're going to see this beautiful wedding covenant, the wording that's used there as they promise to love, honor, and cherish one another until death do they part. And then Moses outlines with exact detail in this wedding covenant, he outlines the results or the consequences, the rewards, and the penalties of their obedience to these regulations and or of their disobedience to these regulations. So with exacting detail, he says, when you obey these laws, this will happen. When you don't obey these laws, this is what's going to happen. It's all there and in black and white so that we can see it very clearly. And then lastly, the third sermon, Moses gets up. It's the last like 7 or 8 chapters. He essentially invites the people to come and ratify this covenant, to sign on the dotted line, and to do what their parents did at Mount Sinai when they were standing at Mount Sinai and they heard the covenant and they said, yes, we'll do everything that you command us to do. And Moses is inviting them to do that, and he commands them. He says, when you get into the promised land, I want you to go to Mount Ebal and to Mount Gerizim, and half of you stand here and half of you stand there and read the covenant again. And then commit to that you're going to do it or that you're not going to do it. And that's what they do. And so if we read forward in Joshua chapter 8, this is exactly what happens. And so this is what the last few chapters are. And then Moses uses it as his way to pass the baton onto Joshua. And then he finally blesses his people. He blesses these people that he's suffered with, that he's loved, that he's poured himself into. He speaks a blessing over them, and that's the end of Deuteronomy. And so we get to see this beautiful picture then of these three sermons. So the question is this: what is the great purpose of Deuteronomy? Why did God give us the book of Deuteronomy? What was he thinking when he gave that to us today in 2015? What does it mean for us today? And this is what I'd like to propose, that it is essentially God's way of establishing in a very physical way that we can see with our eyes a picture of what a covenant would look like, what a loving covenant or a covenant of love should look like, how it works, what it is and what it isn't, and how it is, how the people within that covenant work to obey that covenant and to be a part of that covenant. See, the world at that time, they understood covenant. They knew what it was because Deuteronomy is an example of how it would have been laid out. They understood covenant, but they understood man-made covenant, where man was able to break that covenant, where man was able to keep it or not keep it, and where the consequences were messy. And it may work or it may not work. And it usually deteriorated because man isn't capable of keeping an everlasting covenant like God. So then God comes along, and in this moment, as he's speaking to his people there on the plains of Moab, as they're getting ready to step into the promised land, he does something that's going to change the whole world forever, as he establishes with his people what a covenant of love really looks like, a covenant of love between himself and mankind, a conditional promise where they keep their side and he keeps his side, and as they are obedient and as they follow his laws and observe his commandments, as they love him, he will bless them and he'll take care of them and he'll provide for them, and more than that, he'll be in relationship with them. So they see this for the very first time. No other nation on the earth had that. There was no other God that presented that kind of covenant or relationship. And so what we see God establishing here in Deuteronomy wasn't just for Israel and the Jewish people. It was for the moment. But what God's really doing is painting a picture for all of mankind for all time to be able to see what God's desire is as he enters into relationship with mankind and how he wants that to look and how he wants it to work and the way that it would impact the world for all time. Because as this covenant is unfolded, then we see that it changes everything from that point on. It totally changes the way societies and cultures function because it impacts, if it's really done right, it impacts every relationship that we have. For sure, it impacts our relationship with the Lord, with God. It impacts that relationship as we see his desire to relate to mankind, and as we see the way he wants mankind to relate to him. But it wasn't just the relationship with God that it impacted from that point on. It impacted every relationship. It impacted marriages. It impacted families. It impacted communities and nations. And so this is the great purpose of Deuteronomy, that God would allow us to see covenant, a loving covenant, and what it looks like and how it works and how we operate and live with inside of it. It may seem strange, and this is the point that we're going to thrust at in just a second. It may seem strange to refer to the book of Deuteronomy that is full of laws and the Ten Commandments and the do's and the don'ts and all those decrees and commands, to refer to it as a book of love. But that's what I want to refer to it as tonight. It may surprise you to hear that the word love is used almost 30 times throughout the book of Deuteronomy, as God describes his relationship that he wants to have with mankind and that he desires for man to have with him. So we see God's love for his people in Deuteronomy, the relationship, the intimate relationship that he is expressing that he wants between him and his people and between him and mankind. And in many ways, as we said before, it sounds like the words of a wedding covenant. Listen to some of these words. And I'm just going to read a few verses out of Deuteronomy. Now, therefore, know that the Lord your God is God. He's a faithful God, keeping his covenant of love to 1,000 generations of those who love him and keep his commandments. If you pay attention to these laws and are careful to follow them, then the Lord your God will keep his covenant of love with you, as he swore to your ancestors. He will love you and bless you and increase your numbers. He will bless the fruit of your womb, the crops of your land, your grain, new wine, olive oil, the calves of your herds and the lambs of your flocks in the land that he swore to your ancestors to give to you. And now, O Israel, what does the Lord your God ask of you? And that's a question I think that we're going to land on tonight. What is God asking of you? Now, O Israel, what is the Lord, what does he really want from you? What is it that he's asking in return in this covenant? What does he really want? And this is his answer. What does God ask of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all of your heart and with all of your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and decrees that I'm giving you today for your own good. So if you faithfully obey the commands I'm giving you today to love, honor, and cherish, to serve and to give, I'm making that up. Those are the words that we hear in a wedding, isn't it? That's what we hear as we see the husband and the wife making those vows to one another. I promise to love you and to honor you and to cherish you in sickness and in health, in good times and in bad times, when things are good and when things are bad. And I promise that no matter what happens, I'm going to continue to love you. We see those words right here in the book of Deuteronomy in this covenant that God makes with his people. He goes on and says, however, the Lord your God would not listen to Balaam, but turned the curse into a blessing for you, because the Lord your God loves you. The Lord your God will circumcise your hearts and your hearts, and the hearts of your descendants, so that you may love him with all of your heart and with all of your soul, and so that you may live. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him and to keep his commands and decrees. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you're entering to possess. So we hear this beautiful snapshot picture of a wedding that takes place between God and his people, this covenant of love, of serving, of giving, of providing, of entering into relationship. It's all about the relationship with God. But it doesn't make sense that a book of laws, the Ten Commandments, for sure the world wouldn't see that, could be called also a book of love. But listen to what Jesus says. Listen to these words. You'll see it up here on the screen. He says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. Doesn't that sound like what we just read? If you love me, you'll keep my commandments. He doesn't say, if you love me, you'll paint pictures of me on the wall. If you love me, you'll wear flowers around your shirts. If you love me, you'll sacrifice your firstborn. He doesn't say that. He says, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. It's simple as that. The one who has my commandments, a little bit later in verse 21, he says, the one who has my commandments and keeps them is the one who loves me. A little bit later in verse 23, he says, if anyone loves me, he will keep my word. And then he ends in verse 24, he says, the one who doesn't love me will not keep my words. So when we look at Deuteronomy and we kind of take a close examination of that, we see those exact same phrases, those same words are there. Deuteronomy chapter 10, we just got through reading this, but I want us to look at it again. And he says, and now Israel, what does the Lord your God ask of you? What is it that he wants from you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, to love him, to serve the Lord your God with all of your heart, with all of your soul, and to observe the Lord's commands and the decrees that I'm giving to you today for your own good. It doesn't get any clearer than that. That's what love is to God. See, to God, to love is to obey. Isn't that beautiful? And it's so simple, it's almost like we could pass over that. It's not going to church. It's not wearing a cross around our neck, though those are good things. It's not carrying your Bible with you. It's not even reading your Bible, because we can read it and not do it. It's doing it. It's obeying His commands and living those. So to God, to love is to obey, because in God's economy, love is a decision to stay true to the other person, to do in our actions what our mouth says. See, love and law are not opposed to one another. They actually stand together, love and law. Love isn't based on a feeling. The world says it is and presents it as if it is. Rather, love, real love, is based on a commitment. It's based on a promise, a covenant of love that God desires to have with us. God is giving mankind this beautiful picture for the very first time in the book of Deuteronomy. And this is the kind of relationship I want to have. This is the kind of association I desire to have. This is the kind of affiliation, bond, connection that I desire to have with you, with mankind. This is what I want. It's a love relationship, and it's based on love. And this is what God is asking from us. It's as simple as that. He's not asking for anything else. And I think that because it's so simple, it makes it profound. This is what God is asking from you, and it's what He's asking from me. And it's what He's asking from all men and women who will come to Him and put their trust in Him. It's a relationship that's based on love. And that out of that love then flows obedience to His commands, an honoring of His position and who He is, a willingness to lay aside our own will and to love Him with all of who we are, to love Him with all of our lives. Often within Christianity, people equate things like church attendance with the love of God, or it's perceived that if a person serves and gives a lot or is in a certain position, that this is love. But God says it here very clear that if you love me, you'll keep my commands. It's as simple as that. And so I want to ask you a question without putting guilt on us. I want to ask us a question, because when I answered the question, I was challenged, and I want to challenge you with this question. How well are you loving the Lord? How well are you loving Him by keeping His words, by observing all that He's written in His words, by walking in obedience to Him? Not just a little bit of obedience, but with all of your heart, with all of your soul. When I answer that question, if I'm honest, when I answered that question, I haven't been loving Him very good. I'm just being honest. I often equate my love for Him based on my activity, based on my service, based on my position, based on how many times I've come to worship in His house. But I believe He's calling me. I believe He's calling us to something different that's completely outside of the box of what we're used to. He's calling us to something that's full of life and full of freedom. And as we celebrate this year of Jubilee and that idea of the freedom that He has for us, this is where it's at. That as we enter into relationship with Him, it's about our whole lives being after Him in obedience and following and observing His commands and letting our lives be filled with Him. Nevertheless, this request that God has for mankind, it often gets distorted by man and those that don't know God. Traditionally, it's portrayed as too hard or too restrictive. It's too limiting. It's just too difficult to give what God's asking. And this is the excuse that people throw up all the time so that they don't have to obey God, so that they don't have to walk in His commands. And yet I want you to listen to Moses' capstone, if you will, to his people in Deuteronomy 30. You'll see it up here on the screen. Deuteronomy 30, 11 through 18. And he says this very profound statement. He says, now, what I'm commanding you today is not too difficult for you or beyond your reach. What I'm commanding you today is not too difficult for you. He knew that the people were going to go, ah, that's too hard, it's too limiting, it's too restrictive, I can't do it, we can't do it, we're not going to do it. Moses knew that that's where men's heart were going to go. That's where our hearts go. And Moses says to him very clearly, it's not too difficult for you. It's not outside of your reach. It's not up in heaven so that you have to ask, who will ascend into heaven and get it and proclaim it to us so that we can obey it? It's too far away. Nor is it beyond the sea so that you have to ask, who will go across the sea and get it and proclaim it to us so that we may obey it? It's too far away. No, he says, the word is very near you. It's in your mouth. It's in your heart so that you may obey it. And then he says this amazing statement. See, I've set before you today life and prosperity. I've set before you today death and destruction. For I command you today to love the Lord your God, to walk in obedience to him, and to keep his commandments, decrees, and laws. Then you will live and increase, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land that you're entering to possess. But, and there's always a big but if your hearts turn away from God, sorry, I lost my place. If your hearts turn away and you are not obedient, and if you are drawn away to bow down to other gods and to worship them, I declare to you this day that you will certainly be destroyed. You will not live long in the land that you're crossing the Jordan to enter and to possess. And this is Moses' challenge to these beautiful people that he's nurtured and shepherded and loved on for 40 years. That was his challenge to them thousands of years ago. 4,000 years ago. I don't know how far back. And it's still his challenge, God's challenge, today to us. Because Jesus is inviting us into that same covenantal love relationship. It's the same relationship with the same God and the same parameters and the same do's and don'ts. It hasn't changed because God hasn't changed. He's inviting us to love him with all of our hearts, with all of our souls, with all of our minds, by going to church and by wearing the right clothes and by combing our hair the right way and by listening to the right music and by... That's not what he's commanding us. He's commanding us and challenging us and inviting us into relationship with him if we will observe his commands, and if we'll walk in fear before him and walk in obedience to all that he's written in his word. That's a great challenge. That's the first part of what we want to talk about tonight. Part two, and it's only going to be a short part. It's not going to be Moses' long sermon. Okay, so there's one more thing in Deuteronomy I want to quickly look at, and I want to warn us up front. This is going to challenge us. Because it's challenged me, and I think it's a good challenge. I believe it's from the Lord. Numerous times in the book of Deuteronomy, Moses reminds these people. He reminds them that they're getting ready to enter into something that God promised to their ancestors and to their parents and to their people. They're getting ready to enter into this promised land, this land that God has given to them, and he says it to them very clearly, over and over again. You're getting ready to enter into the land that God has given to you. And then he challenges them with this phrase or this statement, and he says it several times, and he says it over and over. He says, go in and possess the land. Go in and possess the land. In other words, I'm giving you this amazing gift, and now I want you to go in and make it your own. I want you to go in and, using the instruction booklet, you learn everything there is to know about how it works and what it is and where you can go and what buttons work and what knobs work and what they do. Make it your own. This is my gift to you. Now make it your own. Learn everything that there is and possess it. It's yours. He gives us a picture in Joshua. He says to Joshua, as they're getting ready to go in, he says, every place that your foot goes, every place that your foot treads, that will be yours. But he gives us a picture that their feet have to go there. So that might, that territory over there might be theirs, but if they don't walk over there, they're not going to possess it. They have to actually go over there and put their feet on that land. And so we start to get this picture of God saying, it's yours, it's my gift to you, and it's a long promised gift, but now you have to walk in there and possess it. You have to make it your own. It's interesting then, if you fast forward to the end of Joshua's life, to the end of the book of Joshua, and you look at where they're at. Now they've been into this great promised land for decades. They're there. Only two of the 12 tribes have possessed fully their inheritance. They've been there for decades, not just for a few weeks. They've been there for decades, all of the rest of Joshua's life. And now, only two of the tribes have possessed their inheritance. That means 10 tribes have not possessed their inheritance. Said a different way, 10 tribes have not taken everything that God has given to them. God has given them more than they have taken. And this is a human dilemma that we see played out over and over again in our lives, and I've seen it in other people's lives, and this is the problem. God created each one of us with our own, if you will, promised land. He's given to each and every one of us an inheritance, something that is unique to us, that is gifted to us from our God, that nobody else has, that's ours, that he wants us to have. And he says to us, you need to go in and possess that. This is my gift to you. And it includes things like our salvation, all of the areas of our life, our vocation, our giftings, our abilities, our families, our jobs, our ministries, everything that makes up our lives, that's unique to us. God's given that to us. And then he says to us, go in and possess that. This is all from the Lord as a gift, but you still have to make it your own. And this is the key right here. God doesn't force us to go in and possess it. He invites us to possess it. He doesn't make us possess it. He doesn't push us into a corner and say that we have to do it. He gives it to us as a gift, and then he says, go and make it your own. And then with his assistance, with his direction, with his protection, his wisdom, his strength, everything that we need from him, we make it our own. We possess that land that he's given to us. But like the Israelites that were serving under Joshua, possessing the land can be a very costly thing to us, just like it was to the Israelites. If you remember a couple weeks ago when we talked about the book of Numbers, we made this statement. We said that God's calling over our lives is going to be often so challenging that it's going to require from us blood, sweat, and tears. It's going to require of us probably sacrifices, personal sacrifices of epic proportions. As we possess his promise, as we possess his calling over our lives, we said it's not going to be easy. It's not a walk in the park. That's not what God ever promised to us. But this is what I've seen in my life, and this is what I've seen as I've worked with other people. People have a tendency to possess only parts of the whole that they've been given. I can see it in my own life. Only part of the territory that God's given to them, specifically, uniquely to them. They usually possess those parts where there's low-hanging fruit, things that are easily accomplished, things that they can do or they want to do, things that are in their own gift set, things that they can use their own strength and do it their own way. Those are the things that they possess. Typically, they leave unpossessed the things that where the fruit is up higher, the things that are not easily done, the things that are more challenging, require sacrifices and hardships, that require expenditures that they don't want to make or that they don't think that they can make. it requires of them a trust in God that they're not willing to put out, a trust that he's going to actually be who he says he is. Or they leave the areas unpossessed because they simply don't believe that it's important to them. They kind of see it like extra credit, if you will. Like, I'm only going to do what I need to do to pass the class. If that's extra credit, I'm not going there. Too much work. I don't need it anyway. I'm happy just where I'm at. And this is the challenge that we see in the book of Deuteronomy, that I believe we see in the story of the children of Israel, that God has passed along to me, that I would like to pass along to you. It's interesting to me that of the 12 spies that went into the promised land, only two of them came back with a good report. Of the 12 tribes that went into their inheritance, only two of them fully possessed their inheritance. This is challenging to us. So I want to leave you with a couple of thoughts tonight. God is inviting us into the invitation of a lifetime, into relationship, a covenantal relationship with him, where he promises, and we've seen him faithful to bless us and to care for us and to provide for us and to be in relationship with us like no other God. We get to be in relationship with our God as we serve him with all of our hearts, as we obey his commands and decrees, as we love him and walk in fear and obedience. Strangely enough, this invitation is also connected to his gift to us, his promised land for us, his inheritance to us, that as we obey, and serve and follow his commands, those commands that say, I will bless you in the land that is your promised land, and if you obey and follow my commands. And if we don't obey those commands, he says, you'll not live long in that land. These two things are connected to each other. And this is what I believe, that God has given us more territory individually than any of us can even dream, than any of us can even understand or comprehend. The territory that he's given to us individually to possess is humongous, if we'll possess it, if we'll get up off of our tukas and we'll actually possess it, using his strength in obedience to him, in relationship with him, and in everything that he has to give us in provision, we can possess it. And it's going to take a lifetime, because he's inviting us to possess it all. It's his gift to us. It doesn't matter how old we are. It's not about age, because we're possessing our inheritance until the day that we die. And God has something for each one of us still to possess. I don't know about you, but I've decided, and I'm challenged by this message, and the messages that we've been hearing through this series, I'm challenged. I don't want to be like the 10 spies. I don't want to be like the 10 tribes. I don't want to know that I had more that I could have possessed, and I wasn't possessing it. I don't want to spend eternity thinking I could have had more of God. I could have had more of relationship with him. I could have possessed more of his inheritance for my life. So I'm challenged by this. I don't want to be like the 10 spies. I don't want to be like those 10 tribes. And I believe that that's our challenge to us tonight from the book of Deuteronomy. And so if you look at your notes, you have this wonderful quote by Mark Batterson, and I'm going to read that to us as we close. And it goes along with this idea of not quitting and not giving in. And he says, quit living as if the purpose of life is to arrive safely at death. Quit doing that. Set God-sized goals. Pursue God-ordained passions. Go after a dream that is destined to fail without divine intervention. Keep asking questions. Keep making mistakes. Keep seeking God. Stop pointing out problems and become part of the solution. Quit complaining. This is what we talked about in the book of Numbers. Stop repeating the past and start creating the future. Stop playing it safe and start taking some risks. Possess the land that I've given to you. Expand your horizons. Possess everything that I've given to you. Accumulate experiences. Enjoy the journey. Find every excuse you can to celebrate everything that you can. Have a good attitude. Live like today is the first and the last day of your life. Don't let what's wrong with you keep you from worshiping what's right with God. What kind of attitude do we have about ourselves? And it's not about us, it's about God. Burn sinful bridges. Blaze a new trail. Criticize by creating. Worry less about what people think and more about what God thinks. Don't try to be who you are not. Be yourself. Laugh at yourself. Quit holding out. Quit holding back. Possess your full inheritance. Quit holding back and quit running away. Possess everything that God has for you. And remember, if God is for us, who can be against us? Amen. That's the message of Deuteronomy.
We hope that this message has spoken something personal to you. If you would like more information about our church family or service times, please call us at 303-424-2121 or visit us at our website, www.fbci.org. Faith Bible Chapel currently meets in our Family Worship Center, located on the corner of 62nd Avenue and Ward Road.